Chapter 20. Drusel nearly quivered with eagerness as she watched us eat our breakfast in the morning. We still didn't feel comfortable eating in the hotel buffet area where anyone could spot us, but we were sick of our rooms. So we had brought our breakfast to the relative privacy of the staff kitchen area in Nesson's hangar. It was gloppy and half cold. We'd ordered some for our captives in the hotel, immobilized them completely, and gagged them after they'd finished, and then brought our own meals down to eat by the ship. Claiming that she had no need of sustenance at the moment, Drusel stared at us as we ate, most likely willing us to chew faster and idly computing how long it would take us to finish at our current rate of consumption. What had been a pleasant interlude for me and Nikari had been a festival of impatience for her.
"Please let me know if there is anything I can do to speed our journey," she said,
and uttered two similar statements to that effect as we shoveled eggs in our mouths and poured calf down our gullets. Even though we were wolfing it down as fast as we could, Drusel appeared ready to inject us with a nutrient solution and pronounce us able to fly. To take her mind off the fact that we weren't currently on our way to Amarth, I asked her a question. "Is there a chance you could slice through Imperial comm traffic and let us know if any of them are interested in us as we leave the atmosphere?"
"Certainly. Are you planning to head directly to the Galactic East, as discussed?"
I'd made more detailed plans with Nikari earlier, but Drusel had been absent for that discussion. "No. I thought we'd behave like a law-abiding courier ship at first, angling toward one of the interdictor choke points, and then turn sharply spinward and move at top speed to get to jump range before they can redirect their gravity projectors to stop us. That'll take them a few minutes, and we should be able to outrun the Imperial decision-making process. After that, it's up to you and R2 to get us safely to Amarth."
"That shall be as trouble-free as quadratic equations,"
Drusel assured me.
"I have rechecked my math twice, and your remarkable droid has checked it thrice."
It amused me that R2 was now remarkable, where earlier he had performed only adequately.
"We can program the first jump into the nav computer as soon as we leave the surface, and a few moments of recalibration and safety checks at the end of each jump will allow us to make the others shortly afterward."
"Good. Do that. And as soon as you finish, before we escape the atmosphere, I want you and R2 both to check the system and the ship for any spyware or tracers that the Kupoans may have placed on the jewel. And don't forget to program a call to the hotel, checking us out before we jump to hyperspace. The cleaning staff will find Mig and Barisk, and they can go on with their lives. We can go on with ours." Nikari nodded. "I'll go get the pre-flight started, and then I'll go over the hull as well." She chugged the last of her calf and rose from the table. "Better get started."
"I'll help,"
Drusel said, and the two of them left together, with Nikari dropping a, "Hurry up, pilot," to me in a perfect imitation of her father. I looked at R2, whose cam eye swiveled from their retreating forms to my face. "I guess chewing your food is overrated, huh?" It was the wrong thing to say to a droid. His eye rotated back to Nikari and Drusel, and his body followed. A few beeps chiding me for being a slowpoke. With the three of them headed to the Desert Jewel, and the pressure off, I took my time finishing my breakfast and clearing off the table. Azer Nesson found me by the sink while I was recycling my plate, partly to wish us a safe journey, but primarily to give me one last update.
"After some thought, I changed the transponder signal to the fleet code of a competitor last night," he said. "They're called Pulsar Couriers. The story you'll tell the Empire as you leave the planet remains the same. You're still bearing important diplomatic pouches to Rishi. But once you turn and run, the Imperials might inquire afterward why a courier would behave so strangely and jump into nothingness. I prefer not to answer such questions."
I shook his hand and thanked him for his help. He bobbed his head, setting off one last clacking party among his beard beads, and said it was a pleasure conducting business with me. His primary ears twitched, his mouth turned downward, and he began to turn, saying,
Someone...
Then his skull exploded in a bolt of superheated plasma, spraying me with blood, bone fragments, and brain tissue. Another high-powered blaster bolt followed close behind it. But I had already ducked instinctively, and it sailed over me and Azur Nessun's fallen body. I yanked my blaster out of its holster and spied the assassin from a squatting position. It was the mechanic, Ra'uf Wala'uk, and he had company. A horned Deberonian dressed in black and laden down with weaponry. They had come in from the hangar entrance and were squatting down by the engines of the Desert Jewel, firing at me from under the wing. The bounty hunter loudly called the Kapoan an idiot for his poor aim, which told me that I had been the target. I squeezed off a couple of shots in their direction to disrupt their focus and dive for the dining table. I flipped it on its side for a makeshift shield and crouched down behind it as fresh bolts slammed into the top. The table wouldn't hold up for long, and I knew it was tactically a terrible idea to let the enemy pin me down with no place to run. But they had timed their ambush well, and it was either use the table or let them shoot at me in the open. Drusel might have stymied Ra'uf's direct attempts to communicate with the Empire, but she couldn't have stopped him from going into almost any cantina and looking for help. He could have reported, and probably did, through an intermediary, that we were on the planet, thereby corroborating the story of Mig Birkett. But he wanted to make sure he collected that full bounty himself, hence the blaster and the Deberonian bounty hunter. He probably figured even half the price on our heads would be a good haul. Assuming he survived his partnership with the bounty hunter long enough to split the proceeds. A chunk of table on the top side sheared apart under a bolt, and a couple of thin needles of hot metal tore gashes in my scalp and forehead as they passed by. I was lucky they didn't punch through my skull. Instead, I felt warm trickles of blood cooling as they dripped down my head. The trail from my forehead was diverted to the side by my eyebrow, for which I had never been so grateful. I needed some kind of counterattack. Keeping my body behind the table, I stretched out my right arm and pointed my blaster around the edge, firing off three quick unaimed shots to draw their attention. While they directed return fire there, thinking my head must be nearby, I popped up over the top to locate them and took a careful shot at the easy target, Ra'uf Wala'uk. I was already ducking back behind my cover as I heard him grunt in surprise, a sound that was followed closely by the clatter of his blaster on the hangar floor.